प्राकृतिं पुरुषं चैव क्षेत्रं क्षेत्रज्ञं एव च एतद् वेदितुम् इच्छामि ज्ञानं ज्ञेयं च केशव। श्रीभगवानुवाच इदं शरीरं कौन्तेय क्षेत्रं इध्याभिधीयते एतद्यो वेदितं प्राहु क्षेत्रज्ञा इति तद्विदा। Arjuna said, O my dear Krishna, I wish to know about Prakriti, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer, and the field and the knower of the field, and of knowledge and the object of knowledge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, this body, O son of Kunti, is called the field, and one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. O sky of Bharat, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies, and to understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. That is my opinion. We're reading this evening from the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Herein Arjuna is inquiring from Krishna. Beginning of spiritual life, beginning of the search of truth, is to follow the example of Arjuna. Arjuna and Krishna were very dear friends, and sometimes they spoke as friends, they laughed together, they dined together, they joked together. Forget it. Haribo, Haribo. But Arjuna was in a dilemma, the same dilemma that every living being is put into in this material existence. He had to face the dualities of this material nature, and he had to make major decisions in his life. And he wanted, being a sincere person, that the decisions that he made were the best decisions, the decision that would truly be for his own welfare and for the welfare of other living beings. And there were so many opinions from so many people, and even so many opinions in his own mind contradicting themselves. This is the condition of everyone in this world. So in this condition, Arjuna realized that there will be no conclusion to my need for a proper understanding of the way of life as long as I am Krishna's friend. I have to accept him as an authority, and I have to inquire submissively and hear from him. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshatite jnanam jnaninastatvadarshana. Submissive inquiry is the beginning of light and truth in a person's life. As long as we think we know, we can obtain no knowledge. Whatever so-called knowledge we have is imperfect and ultimately cannot help us through the predicaments of life that are most essential. So Arjuna, he took the position of one who does not know. But who was Arjuna? He was a man of such fabulous wealth. He was of such a high birth. He was so incredibly intelligent. He was so skillful in his particular field of activity. But He is presenting himself as one who does not know, like a person thirsty, searching for water. In the same way, sincere souls in this world should be thirsty for knowledge. So he is inquiring from Krishna, what is knowledge? And what is the object of knowledge? What is nature? Who is the enjoyer? And what is the field and the knower of the field? Arjuna's simple question here from the 13th chapter deals with practically all knowledge in this creation. And Krishna's answer to this one question is really all that we need to know in our life. Krishna explains that the field of activity is this body. And Purusha, the enjoyer, the knower of the field of this activity, is the person who is occupying this body. This material body is like a place of residence. It is a house. We dwell in a particular house for some time, but then at a certain point, we have to leave. And this is called death, which everyone is so terribly afraid of death. But according to the Gita, Dehi smin deha nahanyate hanyamane sarire dehino smin yatha dehe komaram yovaram jada tatha dehantara praptir dhirastatra namuyate, that the soul is traveling through this body and all of its changes, and at the time of death it continues to travel through other changes of other bodies. For a self-realized soul, he transcends the illusion of death. We are not the proprietors of this body. We are simply temporary occupying these bodies. Purusha, the Supreme Lord, the Absolute Truth, is the proprietor of all bodies. Gita explains, sarva yoni shakuntaya murtiya sambhavantiya thasam brahma mohojanir aham bija pradapita. Krishna says that I am impregnating this material nature, and through that process of impregnation all life takes place. Just like a father impregnates a mother and then a child is born, Krishna is the force, the source of all life. And when he impregnates material nature, all the living bodies, 8,400,000 species take place. And through these 8,400,000 species of life, each one has a particular way of enjoying and a particular way of suffering. And in the lower species, each particular body is acting according to its own instinctive nature. There are the plants, the trees, the insects and reptiles, the fish, aquatics. Then there is the reptiles, lizards, and there is the beasts, the mammals, and the human species of life. And within human species, there are 400,000 variety. The human form of life is meant to ask the questions that Arjuna is asking today. Who am I? What is this body? Who is living in this body? And who is God? And what are the relationships? These questions constitute, the answers to these questions constitute knowledge. And without properly understanding these essential principles, whatever else we know, we are in ignorance. And our life is wasted. Our human existence is wasted. The Brahma Sutra explains, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, that human life begins when we ask these questions. Not only ask them, but dedicate ourselves to pursuing the answer. This body is fallible. You can make so many wonderful grand arrangements, but beyond our control, we have to fall victim to suffering, and no one has ever avoided that. There are three types of miseries: adiatmaka, adidaivaka, adibhautika. Miseries caused by one's own body and mind, mental distress, anxiety, too much pressure, mental disease, psychiatric problems. Miseries due to poor health, disease, old age. Old age is not pleasant. Everything goes wrong in the body. And however nice we have doctors, what can they do? They may be able to pacify for a few moments. But this body is fallible. It is endlessly mutable. And then there is adibhautika, miseries caused by other living beings. Sometimes we are insulted. Sometimes we are disgraced before others. Sometimes people inflict mental or physical pain on us. Sometimes mosquitoes disturb us, or flies disturb us, or we're afraid of snakes, or we're afraid of competitors. So many miseries. And then there is adidaivaka. Miseries caused by the higher powers of nature. Too much heat, too much cold, too much rain, not enough rain, earthquakes. So many, innumerable. And whoever we are, wherever we live, we cannot really avoid it. Realistically, if we're living in Bombay and an earthquake comes, it really doesn't matter so much what kind of house we live in. It really doesn't matter what kind of car we drive. In fact, the people sleeping on the streets will probably have more chance of surviving because nothing will fall on them so much. So what to do? In Chicago, my father lives in Chicago, and he lives on the 68th floor of a big apartment building right in downtown Chicago. Very costly place. The higher you go, the more costly it is. But when there's a tornado or a hurricane that comes to Chicago, everyone comes down to the basement. Because the bigger you are, the harder you fall, right? What can you do? There are material conditions of life that are beyond our control, and they cause us suffering. And material nature is all under the influence of time. And through time, we are gradually becoming old. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj told his friends, Komara acharit pragyo dharman bhagavata iha. Durlabam manasan janma tarapyatruvamartadam. That when you're a little child, or the earliest age possible, that is the time to ask these questions and pursue the answers to these questions. Because time is not on our side. Time is on material nature's side. And material nature is a place of suffering. There may be some pleasures, but how long do they last? So Arjuna is very serious. And similarly, we should all be very serious. This field of activity called the body is constituted, Krishna explains, of 8 elements. Bhumir apanado vayu kamano buddhir eva cha ahankara iti ame bhina prakriti rashtata. The 5 gross elements which can be perceived by our 5 senses are earth, water, fire, air, and ether or space. And all of the biological discoveries of science are all simply various analyses of these 5 gross material elements. Physics, biology is a study of that. And then there is psychiatry and psychology, which deals with studying and analyzing 3 subtle elements which cannot be perceived by our gross senses. And that is the mind, the intelligence, and the ahankar, or the ego. And these elements are all temporary, and they are all covering the real source of life and consciousness. And Krishna goes on to explain the nature of that consciousness. Apareyam itashvanyam prakritim virime param jiva bhuta mahabaho yagedam dharayate jagat. Besides these 8 material elements, gross and subtle, there is the soul, the jiva, the atma, who is the conscious force giving life to the body. Who is you? Who is me? This body is called a yantra in Gita. It is a machine. And the soul is traveling in this machine. Just like we have our car. Some people have Ambassador, some people have Maruti, some people have Mercedes. So many. Where I'm from, there's so many cars. But it really doesn't make so much difference what kind of vehicle. What makes a difference is who's inside the vehicle. What is your condition? If you're driving in a Mercedes and you're sick and unhealthy and miserable, you'd probably be happier driving in a Ford, healthy and happy. But in our society, we are so brainwashed, so conditioned to take so seriously what is the condition of this physical body and how we can enjoy and decorate and create facilities for this body. But we neglect the needs of the soul. Why? Because we know nothing about the soul or its needs. This is ignorance. You can take beautiful care of your car, your automobile, but if the driver takes no care for himself, what is the use? But that is our life. That is what we are being trained and taught, even in the highest institutions of education today. How to utterly neglect the needs of the soul. How to exert all your spiritual energy to try to enjoy some temporary arrangements. And what type of chaos this creates in the world. One of my dear friends was a professor of economics in a university in America. And he told me the essential law of economics. Very simple. He was a professor for about 20 years with all sorts of awards. He said economics means that this material nature has limited resources by which can be utilized and enjoyed. And every person has unlimited desire to enjoy unlimited resources. So that creates a problem. And therefore, there's so much greed, and there's so much hate on every level. Even within families, there's so much envy and greed and pride. What to speak amongst nations? Why do you think there's so much danger of nuclear wars? It's because of this economic problem. Every country needs unlimited resources for their purposes, and there's only limited resources on this planet. And at one time they were thinking, we will go to the moon and we'll have more resources. But then they realized that it doesn't work. So to overcome this greed is to actually be a hero in this world. And within a civilized society, one who overcomes the tendencies to exploit through this body is actually considered great. But in an uncivilized society with no spiritual culture, the more you can exploit, the more you're considered great. In this great land of Bharatvarsha or India, historically, who are the great persons? Great saintly kings, Rajarshis, like Yudhisthira Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, Lord Sri Ramchandra, Rishabhdev, Prithu Maharaj. These are great kings. They had families, they had palaces, they had armies, they had tremendous money, tremendous influence, but they were God conscious. They weren't under the illusion of exploitation. They realized that I am the occupier of this body. And this body is meant for a purpose, and that purpose is spiritual. And will keep body and mind fit to perform that spiritual purpose. But these great, great kings, they were rishis. They understood the purpose of life. They understood the temporary condition of this body, whoever they were. They understood the eternal treasure that they could attain by utilizing their life properly. And they helped others to facilitate them for the same spiritual objective. And who else were great heroes? The great rishis, the great saints like Narada, like Ramanuja, like Madhva, like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Shankaracharya. These are the heroes that have always been heroes in this culture. Because the Indian culture is the most developed culture in the world. And who are the heroes of the Western countries? Baseball players. Babe Ruth. I don't want to commit any offenses to Babe Ruth, but just factually, he was a womanizer who was cheating on his wife almost every night. He smoked cigarettes. He was a drunkard. When he would lose a game, he would swear and fight with people and punch umpires. But he's one of the greatest heroes of America. Why? Because he could hit a ball farther than anyone else. Therefore, he's great. He's legendary. And everyone loves him. Everyone wants to be like him. Everyone wants to have his darshan. And who else are the big heroes? Rock and roll singers. They sing about sex and drugs, and at least they're not hypocrites. They live according to what they sing. We have to give them credit that they're not hypocritical. But they're heroes. Everyone wants. I remember once I was in Columbus, Ohio. I was giving a lecture from Bhagavad Gita, and about 150 people came to the lecture. But at the same time I was speaking, some rock and roll band was playing just a few blocks, and there was 120,000 people that came for that. Huge stadium. It's not easy being a sadhu these days. But this is the way the world is. And now here in India, we are, the technology and science of America could be very valuable here in India. But we have to be very discriminate what we import, because along with it, we're importing the values. And we see on the society magazines, who are the famous heroes? The woman with the most beautiful features is considered great. What is her chastity? What is her virtue? Nobody cares. And the person who's the best cricket player is the one that everyone likes to hear and see. And people are more interested in cinemas and television than Mahabharata, Ramayana, or Bhagavad Gita. And what's happening? We see what's happening. We see a sample. But I'm coming from a land where I have seen and lived with relatively advanced stages of what's happening here. Massive drug addiction, massive alcoholism, crime, drug wars in the street, pollution everywhere. So much fear that people don't even go out at night out of fear of being robbed, raped, killed. A land where one out of every three children are murdered in the womb, where the love of a mother for a child, which even the animals have, has been reduced to just kill it if it's a disturbance. No sense of responsibility. A civilization where 68% of marriages end in divorce within 3 years. And those marriages that do remain, there's usually all sorts of cheating going on, and it's more or less accepted. And the young people are basically just lost. When our Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, came to America, he didn't know what to expect. He came in 1965, with the idea that the people of India are so mad chasing after American ways that they're totally departing from their own inherent culture. And they don't want to listen to their own culture because they're chasing after some other place. So he thought, if I could convince Americans to accept Bhagavad Gita, and they come to India, then the Indians will think, well, if the Americans think it's good, then Bhagavad Gita must be good. This is after years and years of preaching to the people of India, he came to this conclusion. But when he came to America, he was astounded. He saw beautiful, beautiful highways. And wonderful, wonderful skyscrapers and beautiful houses and phone systems that work in every house. Middle class America, every person in the house has their own television. Why? Because without it, there'll be warfare. Because there's so many television shows and everyone wants to watch their own show. And if there's one television, there's constant arguments. So everyone just goes in their own rooms and isolates themselves. I know. I lived there. I saw. I traveled. So much advanced. Everything. But he noticed that the young generation were becoming hippies. Do you know what is hippie? In the 60s? There were no poor people that became hippies. The hippies were people who just became filthy, dirty, left their homes, lived on the streets, started taking drugs, looking for some higher truth in life, growing their hair long, doing all kinds of things like totally outcasts of society by their own free will, rejecting all the norms of the establishment. And all the hippies were from the upper class American society, and some from the middle class, none from the lower class. And when our Guru Maharaj saw this, he was astounded. This is the conclusions of the youth when they're giving everything, but they're not given a purpose to live. They're not given a reason. And they see that their parents, they have everything but peace. They have everything but fulfillment and happiness in life, so they don't want any part of any of it anymore. And he sat in a little park with his little cymbals, chanting Hare Krishna mantra, and all these people came, not all, but many, thousands, tens and thousands. And most of these hippies were college graduates. And they were asking, what is the purpose of life? What is the meaning of life? We're tired of this superficial, shy, shallow, empty shell of a life. And when he explained Bhagavad Gita, they had something to live for. They became clean. They became moral. They became pure and dedicated and willing to sacrifice and work harder than anybody because they had something to live for that had meaning. They understood what is the soul. What is the eternal nature of life? And what is God? So Krishna is explaining that this physical body is the kshetra. It is the field of activities. It is the vehicle. And it is the atma, the soul, which is the occupier. But it is God, Purusha, Krishna, that is the proprietor. And what is the difference between our soul and God, the Jivatma and the Paramatma? That your soul can experience and understand what is happening in your particular body to some extent. We really don't even know what's happening in our own bodies. Sometimes a mosquito bites you and you just think, oh, it's not so bad. But you don't know that what's happening is there's bacterial germs that are filling you, and it's tomorrow or in near future you'll be devastated. When we eat our food, we don't know what's happening. We just have faith that we will survive. We eat. And the pleasures and pains of our body we experience. But we do not understand. We cannot experience the pleasure and pains of other bodies. But the Paramatma, or God, or Krishna, is seated within the heart of every living being. Krishna knows the pleasures, the pains, the thoughts, everything about every living being. The Bhagavad Gita teaches that there are two souls in every body. There is the Jivatma, which is you and me, and there is the Paramatma, which is Krishna. And the Katha Upanishad gives the example that these two souls are like two birds living in the same tree. The Jivatma is that soul that is trying to enjoy the fruits of the tree of the body. And sometimes he eats a fruit and it's very sweet and he enjoys. But at other times, he tastes the fruit and it's terribly bitter and he suffers. So in this way, trying to enjoy fruits, he goes through year after year, life after life, of enjoying and suffering, enjoying suffering, enjoying suffering. But the Paramatma, that other bird, is simply watching and waiting. Stop trying to enjoy the fruits of this body and turn to me. I will give you real pleasure, ananda, spiritual bliss. And that is what everyone is longing for. It is explained that there are 5 stages of consciousness. One is called anamoy. Anamoy is when we are under the conception that the highest truth is to eat food. That is like a baby. A baby doesn't know anything but food. They see God, they see the goal in life in getting some milk from the mother or getting something to eat. And the animals are also on that conscious, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Their goal of life is simply like that. A higher state of consciousness is pranamoy. Pranamoy means to understand the living symptoms within ourselves and the living symptoms within others. To understand the nature of life. That is pranamoy. And then there's jnanamoy. Jnanamoy means to understand that there is a state of existence beyond just satisfying the gross elements of the body and the senses. That we have a subtle consciousness. Eat where we're feeling and thinking and willing. We understand the nature of the mind, an empiric search for higher truths. That is called jnanamoy. And then there is vijnanamoy. Vijnanamoy means when we realize the soul. We realize that there's something beyond this body and mind, that there's a spiritual existence, and that spiritual existence is me. And then there is a highest platform, anandamai. Anandamai means to realize our relationship with the Supreme Soul, the loving relationship between the Jivatma and the Paramatma, which is full of ecstasy. Because in anandamai, there is love. In vijnanamai, there is liberation. In anamai, pranamai, and jnanamai, there's material, different levels of material bondage. But beyond liberation is love, is ecstasy. And this is what every soul is searching for. The Vedanta Sutra explains, anandamayo vyashat. That every living being is seeking that pleasure of ananda. Why? Because it is our nature. We are Sat-Chit Ananda. We are eternal, we are full of knowledge, and we are full of bliss. That is our constitutional position. Sat is the quality of eternity of the soul. Chit is the quality of knowledge. It is within us, it is inherent. The word education comes from the Greek word edukari, which means to bring out, to draw out what is within you. What college, what university, what high school teaches real education? Where are our children taught to draw out what is within them? We're taught to be computers, just to input so much data from outside sources and make our brain to remember all these things. But everything, all knowledge, is already within us. But the most essential knowledge, the knowledge of our relationship with the Supreme, the knowledge of our true self, our relationship with nature. Sat-Chit Ananda. It is the nature of the soul to be full of bliss. Why? Because it is the nature of the soul to know God and to love God. And we find that the bliss that everyone is looking for in this world is through loving relationships. As they say, it makes the world go round. the great search for loving relationships. There are civilized and uncivilized methods of looking for loving relationships. Unfortunate people look for it on a grossly physical level. In the Western world, music is the expression of the culture of a particular place. And when all the music is about love affairs, and I'm not speaking about spiritual love affairs, I'm speaking about sexual love affairs, that's all they sing about in the Western countries. That's the music everyone wants to hear. And most of it is about frustrated sex life. Because that's what most people can identify with. It might be unpalatable, but it's true. People are looking for pleasure through loving relationships. And in more civilized societies, through family. There's certain love between family members. And that's the heart, the nucleus of everything we work for, everything we do. The loving relationships of our family members. We build our businesses, we develop our occupations because we want to give a good life to our children, our wives, our husbands. Civilized people feel like this, that if my children are happy, if my husband's happy, if my wife's happy, then everything's all right, even if everything else fails. But somehow or other we have to make the best we can from our family, and we have to leave the best we can behind before we die. That means our whole life is based around loving relationships. Because in loving relationship there is a sense of ananda, or satisfaction. Why? Ananda mayobhyashat. Because the soul has a loving relationship with the Supreme Soul, or with Krishna. And Krishna is explaining here that when we utilize this field of activities, this body, we utilize the subtle field of activity, our mind, our intelligence, and our ego, in pursuit of our natural, eternal, true relationship with the Supreme, with God, that is knowledge. And that is where we find real ananda, real bliss. And this is the greatest need in human society. All of the terrible things going on in the world is because people are simply dissatisfied. Narada Muni, he would travel so many places teaching people what are the highest goals and values of life. He went to one king, his name was Prachini Barhishat. He was a very great king. And he had conquered so many lands. He was so successful. And he thought he was happy. And Narada Muni felt so sad for him. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj, taught us like this. That a saintly person has great pity for a person suffering in this world. But he has greater pity for people who think they're enjoying in this world. Because they're actually in a more suffering condition. Because they can't understand that there's something beyond. So Narada Muni, through so many wonderful analogies, he convinced this king that there's a spiritual goal of life. And you don't have to give up your material ambitions. You simply have to direct it toward the spiritual goal of life. That is the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna did not tell Arjuna, to renounce his family. Arjuna had 3 wives, and he could keep them all satisfied. Draupadi, Subhadra, and another. Very difficult for any man to keep one wife satisfied. That's why I became a sannyasi. Try to keep life simple. But it's very difficult. But he kept all his 3 wives perfectly satisfied. He was a very responsible, and he was not a Brahmin. He was a warrior. He had very, very intense responsibilities to society. Krishna didn't tell him to become sannyasi. He didn't tell him to become Brahmin. He told him to do your duty. But not like many of the philosophers of India who mistakenly mislead people to say that work is worship. Yatra lokomam karma. Work done in devotion to the Supreme Lord, in knowledge and remembrance of the Supreme Lord, is worship. And that work will liberate you from all suffering. But he says any other work only incriminates you in the bondage of karma. To work without expectation of results is not what the Gita teaches. The Gita teaches that you should work without expectations result for your own satisfaction, but you should work to make an offering to the Supreme Lord. That is the perfection of life. That is the Gita. That is the life that every soul is longing for. So Krishna explained, you do your duty, Arjuna. You have to... What type of duty he had to do? This Gita was spoken on the battlefield of Kurukshetra just prior to the greatest war in human history. He wasn't just sitting like this. He was working hard. He wanted to sit like this. Krishna said, no, you cannot. It is not your dharma. Fight. But fight for me. Don't fight for your own selfish desires. Don't fight for your own egoistic prestige. Fight for me. Because if you fight for your prestige or for your other desires, it will only incriminate you in bondage and ultimate suffering. But if you fight for me, it will liberate you from bondage. And you will experience the real pleasure of life. The real art of living. And this is Gita. That whatever situation we're in, man mana bhava mad bhakto madhya jimnam namaskaru mame vaishashi shatyam te prati jani priyoshi. Always think of Krishna. Become Krishna's devotee. Worship Krishna. Offer your homage to Krishna. In this way, Krishna says, you will come to me without fail. This is the meaning of Sharanagati, surrender. Surrender doesn't mean to leave your house and live in the forest. Surrender means to make your house a temple of God, to acknowledge that Krishna, I'm the occupier, but Krishna is the proprietor, and to recognize that, and to make all of the activities in the house centered around devotion, rather than centered around exploitation. That is the teaching of Gita. You have a trade, whether you are an architect, an engineer, a doctor, a businessman, an industrialist, a lawyer, a housewife, a student. Perform your work in a spirit of devotion, in a spirit of detachment and devotion. What is detachment? Detachment means we put our own will second to Krishna's will. Detachment is what Arjuna is exemplifying when he says, Krishna, I do not know, please tell me, and I'm willing to do. I'm willing to serve your instruction. This world is full of people who know, who think they know, but there's only a few who admit, I don't know. And they approach the Gita in that spirit. Because Krishna knows. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat puranitam. Real religion is what is spoken by God. It's not what's spoken by me. It's not by spoken by any Swami or Guru or Yogi or anyone else. It's what's spoken by God. And whoever simply, with humility, submits to God and repeats his word, that person can give us enlightenment. Not someone who can perform all sorts of magical tricks or mystic feats. Not someone who can juggle words to convince anybody of anything. There are so many like that. But one who is humble and who has submitted himself to accept God's word and repeat it, that person can give us enlightenment. God's word is so clear in Gita. To always think of him, to become his devotee, to make our life centered around him. And if we want to give something precious to our children, we should give them this. That is real love. Real love is to give a person what they need most. In the Western countries, they're giving their children every possible facility for material enjoyment. And as I said, the children rejected everything and became hippies because they didn't want it anymore. It was futile. And I see in India, children are starting to do like this too. We should give our children a meaning of life. We should give them truth. And some people are afraid to give their children truth. If we give them too much truth, they will not be able to compete in this world. They will not be efficient. They will not be able to perform their studies properly. Where do we get this idea? People think if we give our children too much religion, they will not be motivated. They'll just be passive and basically useless. Huh? When they get old, after I'm dead, and they retire, then they can take to religion seriously. But now, let them be dynamic. But then we have to ask the question, which is a more motivating force, greed or love? A mother loves her child, and a good mother, she'll stay up all night long. She'll do anything for her child. But a babysitter who's getting paid will not do anything for your child. If it gets too rough, she'll quit and go somewhere else. Love is a more powerful motivating source than greed. Arjuna was the best warrior because he heard from Krishna and he was motivated to do his work for Krishna. And in our own congregation in Bombay, so many young people in college, and almost every one of them is number one in their class. Narahari, what are you in your class? Not which class, what? She's second in her class. And she lives in the temple. We have an orphanage with children being trained in Krishna consciousness, and so many of them are number one in their class. Why? Because we teach them, you're doing it for Krishna, so do it. If you're doing it for Krishna, you should do it better than anyone else who's doing it for something else. And as we see, so many of the people here, they're in their businesses, they're devotional, they have more motivation, more determination, more reason to perform their work. So we should understand what is love. The animals, their love for their children is just giving them food, giving them some shelter, cleaning their bodies. Human civilization without God consciousness in the center is nothing of a higher quality than that. Real love is to give that which will liberate our children from suffering. Real love is that which will give our children a real fulfillment and purpose of eternal life, which will connect them to God, to Krishna. And what to speak of ourselves. So this is the great need of human society. And the bell is ringing. Where I'm from, when the bell rings, that means it's the end of class. So I thank you all very much. Lord Chaitanya has come to teach us simple, sublime method in this age of Kali of perfecting our lives. Three things are important, of most importance. One is living according to high principles of morality and character. If you have everything but you don't have character, you have nothing. Character means the willingness to put aside what is not right, no matter who says what. To fall into immorality because of social pressure means you have no character. It means you're basically useless. We have to understand what is right and we live by it no matter what anybody says. That is character. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. These are basic principles of morality. No lying, no unnecessary cheating. And then there is association with saintly people. Saintly people means whether they are householders or whether they are in the renounced order, people who are genuinely seeking truth and who are really living according to spiritual principles. They are saintly people. To associate with saintly people, to hear the truth in the company of saintly people, as we are experiencing tonight. And the third principle is to chant the name of God. Because the name of God is the cleansing method of purifying our consciousness, especially in this age of Kali. By living a moral life and by associating with religious people, we are keeping our life stable and clean. But the problem is we have so much dirt built up from so many lives of the past. Even if we're clean now, even if we're doing nice things now, the chanting of the name of the Lord is so powerful. It is explained in the scripture that the name of God purifies greater than the Ganges by millions of times. It goes right to the core of our heart and uproots all unwanted desires. And what happens when all unwanted desires are erased from our heart? The real desire of the soul shines through our consciousness. And the real desire of the soul is full of love, full of compassion, full of mercy. The consciousness of the soul knows God. It is always willing to serve God and serve all of God's creation selflessly. That is the nature of every soul. The chanting of the holy names of the Lord cleanses the mirror of our mind and allows our true real self to reflect through everything we do, everything we say, and everything we think. So living a pure moral life, associating with saintly people, and chanting the names of the Lord, these three principles give us a foundation, a spiritual foundation. And then everything else we do in our life, through our families, through our occupations, through our hobbies, they all bring us closer to God if we have that foundation. And those of you who know a little about building, you know that no matter how good the house is, if the foundation is weak, the house is weak. So we may be building our big palaces and castles, working so hard, but do not neglect the spiritual foundation, which holds it all together, gives it stability, strength, and purpose. And that is through moral living, good satsang, good association, and the name of God. Is there any questions? If anyone has any questions, we can try to answer. Thank you very much. It's my great pleasure to be here. I would like to extend my gratitude to Ajay and family, Swati and Lalita and Una, all of these wonderful people. They have made this nice gathering possible tonight. And really, it is such a wonderful service to bring people together for a social gathering that is enlightening and purifying to our hearts. So we're really grateful to them for this. They have this beautiful home to invite people to come and hear and chant the glories of the Lord in their home is the perfection of our home. The ultimate purpose of a home. And of course, to live in the spirit day by day makes our home a holy place. One great devotee, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had 10 children, and he was a district magistrate under the British government. He lived in Bengal, Orissa. But he was such a devotee. When he would come home from being in the courts all day, and he would come into his house, his whole family would be doing devotional activities to the Lord. And he would say, when I enter my house, I see my house transformed into Goloka Vrindavan. Because factually, wherever Krishna's name is being chanted, wherever Krishna's seva is being performed, that is Vrindavan. You don't have to go to Delhi and take the Taj Express to Mathura and go to Vrindavan. You can make Vrindavan in your own heart, in your own home, by just remembering Krishna and chanting his name. So.